This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
Ooh, light the walls on fire, let them burn. We've got a lot to say, but we don't need words.
Hello and welcome to the Lookout Landing Podcast. This voice you hear is mine, Matthew Robertson, staff writer at Lookout Landing, and I'm taking over the podcast because we're using my computer. So you're all at the mercy of
That's
me.
That's how it works, folks.
You're at the mercy of me and like a seven-year-old laptop. I'm joined today by our fearless leader, the Quavo to my takeoff, Kate Prusser.
I don't know what that means.
Oh, it's a Migos reference, Kate.
Oh, yeah. What's that sound they always make?
Certainly not that. I don't know if you know who Migos is.
I don't.
All right, well, that's okay. Kate, how are you doing besides, you know, whatever that just was?
Thinking besides Migos is a
group farm of dogs?
Bird.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was like a brunch dish, so I guess, whatever. I'm doing good. Speaking of brunch, we're sort of having like a day podcast, live in-person podcast, giving up a little bit of sound quality for that fresh in-person experience, so I have my coffee, and I have my monkey bread, and I have all the various accoutrements of brunch. So
yes.
I am, like any white woman, would be deeply satisfied.
Yeah, Kate is drowning in accoutrements. It's pretty cool. And also joining us is Deputy Managing Editor, I believe.
Yeah, baby. It's a very important and formal title.
Deputy
Managing Editor. And I guess to continue the Migos analogy, you would be Offset?
That's a fantastic situation for me. You are thinking of Migas, by the way.
Which is delicious and fantastic.
Yeah. Much like Migos, probably. But
I don't know. Sure they Migos do not delicious. Look like they yeah. would taste very good.
Wow.
Isn't Offset the one who, the only thing I know about him is that he climbed on stage trying to get Cardi B back with him? Because
they are together, I think.
He is like the small market team trying to hold on to a superstar. That is the tweet, right? I think John is much better.
Shout out to Tweet. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Can John rap?
Absolutely not. But I do not attempt.
That is true. I just watched Free Solo with my roommate. Have you guys seen this? Heard about this?
I watched the trailer. I know the entire story. It was, as someone who is already scared of heights and like got a little queasy watching Tower Heist with I believe Ben Stiller, I figured that was not going to, there's like a vertigo inducing scene. So
you're afraid of heights? You're like 7 feet tall. I was built
very tall. I have like a 4 to 5 inch vertical leap. I'm not meant to get that much further off the ground. Like, I was built the proper distance off the ground. I don't need to get any further off. I like being on the ground. On solid green earth, it's great. How was Free Solo? What was your perspective?
Basically, for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's a movie about a guy who wants to die, but he's way too good at rock climbing. That's essentially the movie. Like, every single time he's like, all right, I'm doing it, might die. And then he comes back and he's like, well, I didn't die. But he's like, really, he's like truly the best rock climber of all time. He's doing this like this wall in Yosemite that's like the holy grail of rock climbing, and he's doing it without a rope or anything. It's just
It's called him. El Capitan,
yeah. He's doing it free solo, which is the title of the movie. But yeah, I mean, in all seriousness, beautiful movie.
Yeah.
Some of the shots they get are horrifying, but they're like very beautiful. Takes you into like his life and sort of everything. But it's just been on my mind since I watched it.
Well, like, half the movie is about how, like, all of his friends who are, like, helping film it are, like, terrified that they're going to film their friend die.
Oh, my God.
Like, right? I mean,
no, that is another big part of the movie, yeah. They're worried about, like, essentially being complicit in his death. Or, like, if there's a camera crew, if that's going to make him more nervous, you know?
Yeah.
Which is another thing that comes up. He, like, bails on one of the climbs. because he's not comfortable doing it in front of the camera. But you can make the case that it's the most impressive athletic achievement of all time. Because
it's 900 meters straight up,
straight,
essentially.
Straight granite. And as he explains many times, like, in order to do it, you have to bat 1,000 or you die.
Yeah.
You cannot slip even for a second or you will perish.
So is this the segue into talking about the Seattle Mariners then?
No. That was just me thinking about a movie.
Okay.
I don't know, recapping the listeners on our life outside of
baseball. I thought
you
were like setting up a long thing where you're going to be like, and like the Mariners, he cannot make a mistake in order to maintain his precarious position. No.
We can run with that. That's good.
I'm just thinking, you know, it's a Mariners podcast.
It is
so
a Mariners podcast.
We probably want
to. Yeah.
Matthew's movie podcast.
That's coming later.
Separately.
Yeah. The Mariners, though, are climbing without a rope. Nothing is holding them back.
There you go.
There it is. The 9-2 Seattle Mariners.
The league leading Seattle Mariners.
Best team in baseball by winning percentage, wins, and dingers.
Yeah, and beating laundry. Got rid of the Red Sox and the White Sox.
Yes. We stand triumphant over all sartorial teams. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, it's great. I've actually kind of been like somewhat detached just because of circumstances. Like, I didn't really see much of the White Sox series. I saw bits and pieces here and there.
Day baseball is tough.
It is. It is. And then there was the rain out. Like, I was planning on watching the Thursday game, but then got postponed because no one has a roof. Which is another issue that we're going to talk about later, I think. But it feels nice to just check in, like when I was monitoring the series and just being like, oh, I wonder what cool thing is going to happen. Which is like, someone said that, right? One of
yeah,
the players.
It was, I want to say
Jason
it was Jason
Bradford.
Bradford.
Jason
yeah.
Bradford
Surprising source of joy this year.
Yeah.
Did not think Jason Bradford would be like,
because he's a like expected source of pitches in the strike zone, which
yes.
makes him relatively a,
yes,
a
yeah.
source of joy for the bullpen.
But I think he said it best. He said the attitude is that they just go out and what cool thing can we do today? And
mm-hmm.
I think that not only is that a great way to live as a baseball team, but it's a great way to kind of live your life. Like,
yeah.
Wake up every day and ask yourself,
this
what
is
cool
an intervention,
thing can I do
listeners.
Today?
Yeah. You're not doing nearly enough cool things, listeners. Get out there and cool it up. But that's kind of been my approach to watching because I am not, like, last season and pretty much for the whole Cano era, I was like, I need them to win so they can make the playoffs
yeah.
and get this monkey off our back.
Right.
But then this year it's more like it just happened accidentally that they are winning and in extremely early playoff position. But it's more like, oh, what's Vogelbeck going to do today? Which reliever is going to have their first ever save or whatever? Like, it's all just, like, random cool occurrences that are happening and it's like kind of gravy on everything else.
Which in a way is what I thought I was going to be watching this season. Like, I was going to be watching the season to see Domingo Santana and
mm-hmm.
what Domingo Santana might be. And watch the season and see, you know, if players who didn't have great years last year could take a step forward this year. Like, what's Ryan Healy going to do? What kind of improvements can D. Gordon make now that he's healthy?
Right.
Can Daniel Vogelbach perform when he's given at least a little bit more, you know, consistent play.
Absolutely. And in watching each of those individuals, somehow it's kind of all added up to this big, beautiful, bountiful, offensive slugging team that's
yeah.
just... And offense is fun. It's really fun. I've never
yeah.
been like the world's biggest
yeah,
dinger
say.
Person. Yes, but...
A dinger denialist.
I'm not a dinger denialist. I just love the hit tool. I love getting like a clutch hit. And yesterday I did feel like they paid me back a little bit when in that extremely long third inning against Nova. It was literally 5 singles in a row broken up only by Mitch Haniger grounding out. But yeah, it was just like, oh, okay, we can go big fly, but we can also just be really annoying. And I like that. I like my baseball players annoying the other team.
100%. Part of the White Sox series that I did catch was Sunday's game, like the first 2 or 3 innings. So I think I caught the beginning of that rally.
Mm-hmm.
But part of it was, it might have been the second inning actually, was Narvaez had like a 13 pitch at bat. And I was like, this is... like, truly, truly the exact opposite of what we've had in the past.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, the Z is definitely being C'd, but it's also, like you said, just them being annoying and, like, not just you know, like giving in. Like Narvaez was getting the same pitch and just kept
fouling it off.
Like almost just discarding it. Like, no, you gotta throw me something else. I'm gonna hit 35 foul balls.
Trash.
So like you have a decision to make. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I think Shannon Dreher posted a tweet that last year they were 27th in the majors at taking pitches per at bat, mm-hmm. and this year they're up to like 7th already.
Yeah,
maybe they were 29th last year.
I think it was 27th, but they were not. It was not a strength, and it was only I think because you know they actually would have some hitters who at least teams would pitch around, like Cruz, whereas you know. The Royals, no one was pitching around anyone, but like,
right.
but I think to your point about the hit tool, you know, it's been, obviously they've been hitting for way more power than really we expected or anyone expected. And at some point, you know, that's going to slip a little bit, just even if they continue doing what they're doing, because teams will adjust a little bit, but they are striking out at a below league average rate, which was true last year.
Yeah.
But they are actually sort of capitalizing when they're making contact. You know, last year it was a lot of short at bats where the contact would be on the ground or just not very good.
Yeah.
And this year you're seeing guys waiting for their pitch or having those long at bats, like you guys mentioned, where Narvaez fights, eventually actually gets his pitch and still manages to hit it. And that's been every game, basically. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they've had one poor offensive game, and it happened to coincide with the best pitching game of the year. And, you know, every other game, essentially, has been just a strong, balanced performance. So, I mean, the hit tool has been there, and it's just also led to power, which is really cool to watch.
I mean, you see that in Ryan. I don't think that any player is a better embodiment of that change in approach than Ryan would, like, last year really try to be aggressive on a first pitch fastball.
Yeah.
And then pitchers figured him out and they started throwing him some garbage and he chased.
Yeah.
And then his at bat was like over like that. Now you see him really being more selective, waiting for his pitch, and then really doing damage on that like 2-0 pitch.
Yeah. So it'll be, I guess, is there anyone that you've seen who you think has done something, who do you think has shown the most dramatic change? Is it Ryan, or and a change that you think would be consistent, that could be, even if it's not at this rate, that still would be like a dramatic improvement from last year that could be sustained?
I think I'll go with Ryan, just because his at-bats were literally painful for me to watch last year. Like, it pained me to watch him take an at bat, and it didn't just pain me because they were bad at bats. It pained me because of his reaction afterwards, because Ryan takes things very intensely. Mm-hmm. And you know, I heard him tell a story once on 710 about how he was at like a baseball turn. Both his parents are athletes and both of them have really high expectations of him, and he got like second at a tournament or something, and his dad like threw away his second place trophy in the trash. Like, it didn't make it to the car. I know.
Master motivator.
I have some real qualms about, but I just think if that's like your mindset, I think it's equal. Well, I think it can be good, but it can also be really damaging to have that. And last year you just see him get so frustrated, and he did have some bad at-bats in the Angels game against Cahill, where it looked like old Ryan, and I was like, oh, no, no, no.
I think a good slider, a really solid slider still gets him, but he's at least been, he's been laying off a little bit more. It's kind of like, this comparison may not ring very well with a lot of people, but you know, when Zunino came back in 2017 and he was mostly the same hitter, except he was didn't swing at every pitch in the dirt anymore, and like that just by itself was enough to make him into like a passable player, like enough to like make it so like, okay, your glove, like you're hitting well enough that like we are comfortable that we can have your amazing glove back there.
Yeah. It was a little concerning to watch him that one day, but Ryan did kind of bounce back. It was good to see him take good at bats this series. I mean, Nova is capable. I mean, he's like capable. An average pitcher. He's an average still pitcher. Pitching, yeah. So.
Yes. That's something.
Good for him. And Cahill is very similar to that. And, you know, it's so much easier to be like, okay, now we're going to work on you not flailing at a slider than now we're going to work on everything because right. your at-bats are garbage and we have to. So just seeing those, I believe that they are, I believe that Ryan's will not probably go at this pace because they're going to readjust to him as they did to Zunino when Zunino quit chasing and then they pitched him differently and then he took another step back. So that'll happen, but and I think he'll take a little dip. He won't hit at this amazing clip all year, but yeah. I want to believe. I think he's a little bit of a slow learner, but I want to believe that he's going to make the adjustments and be much better than he was last year.
I sure hope so, because I've compared him, like you said, his thing where he would like, you know, have some bad at-bats, they would like linger, he mm-hmm. would get visibly sad. That reminded me of like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh. Yeah. It's just immediate like, oh, shoulder slump, yes. sad walk yeah. back to the dugout. So I'm hoping he can transition more into like a
Tigger,
a Pooh or a Tigger.
The Tigger is who Ryan is yeah. deep down. Is he not? Like I Ryan think so. Is totally
I think it's a spectrum
Tigger.
Where like Eeyore is the worst of Ryan, middle ground would be Pooh, and then top would be Tigger.
Yeah, we want you to live to your full Tigger potential.
Absolutely.
Ryan.
Yeah. I think this discussion we've had bleeds nicely into a question we got. We're just going to pepper them in because we got so many questions.
Thank you.
Yeah, as always. But this is one that I think is kind of at the top of everyone's mind, something that I'm sure a lot of fans are wrestling with. The question comes from Nick Fielden. Nick says, how long do the Mariners need to keep this up for you to believe that we have a shot this season? And obviously there's a lot of variables here, a lot of reasons for concern. But, I mean, the wins are here, and the thing that has kept me, you know, I still don't think if I had to put actual currency on it, I don't think the Mariners are going to make the playoffs. But the American League looks so bad that I think the door is like cracked open a little bit.
So yeah. unbelievable. Because
all it really
bad.
Takes is one prolonged slip up from the Yankees, Red Sox, or Rays trio.
Well, the Yankees aren't healthy. That's exactly. their big right. problem.
So that is helping us.
And they've been managing to sort of tread water a bit, and they right. played the Orioles, but yeah. I think they're going to run into some challenges. Sabathia maybe comes back soon, but especially if they end up losing Andujar for the rest of the year. You know, they're already down Severino for a while. They're already down Tulowitzki now. They're down...
Yeah, who could have seen that one?
They're down... they're down Gregorius until the middle of the year. Yeah, I mean, they are... they're in a rough spot. And,
yeah.
And, I mean, Sanchez is not a guy with a great injury history either. Aaron Hicks is still out. Stanton's on the IL. So, yeah, they are a bit of a target right now. And, you know, the M's have not played the Astros yet. They haven't played the Yankees yet, but, you know, they say what you will about how rough the Red Sox have looked. Ostensibly, the pitchers that they have are still good pitchers, and the reason that the Red Sox... Well,
their ERAs tend
right, to... Right, but that's largely because the Mariners clobber
Kate
them,
has
right?
turned one so quickly yeah. on the Red Sox.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, for me, the thought process is... Is it more likely that Chris Sale, Nathan Eovaldi, and Eduardo Rodriguez are suddenly terrible, or that the Mariners lit yeah. up some pretty yeah. good pitchers? And so, like, I think that's a good look, and I think we're going to have a lot. I think we're going to have a season of mostly this, and I think there are going to be some more games where the errors burn them more, or the offense
yeah.
isn't going to be able to keep it up because they're, you know, I mean, they're allowing over five runs a game.
Like, you're not
going to
score
bad.
10 runs on the Astros pitching staff, and that's what I'm concerned. So,
well, and that's okay, right? I mean, like that part of that is like
that's okay.
Great
but...
teams have great numbers in part because they wallop shitty teams, and the Mariners last year eked by a lot of shitty teams, and then also kind of eked by good teams, but like they never really dominated anyone except for Cleveland, like
yeah.
that one weird
yeah.
series.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like even when they had that great run early in the season, it was like they took 2 out of 3 from the Tigers. They took 2 out of 3 from the White Sox.
Right.
It was like, you need all these wins because, you know, everyone else is getting all these wins.
Sure.
So I think I'm not going to believe in their playoff chances for At least until, like, the end of May, I think.
I was going to say August. Like, I really want this to, like, play out before I get too excited. Just based off, like, the talent level of this team and knowing, like, what happened just last year, for example, when we were 10 games up on a playoff spot in July. And then, you know, the balloon kind of burst. So I'm approaching this season with, like, a bit of sort of, like, detachment, just because I don't want to get fully invested until it's, like, somewhat clear that this might be real. Like, I just don't want to get hurt again, Kate.
Right. No, last season was such a extended, it just felt like for all of July and August, somebody was kicking me all the time. Just like a constant, you know, like one of those Rube Goldberg machines with, like, a boot on it.
Yeah.
And it's just a perpetual motion. Yeah, sure, of course. But I am really interested in what they do when they come home from this road trip. They've got the games against Kansas City, and then they come back, and that's when they have to face the Astros. Yeah. And I think that, and then they have Cleveland after that, who are off to a shaky start, but
this is the time to play Cleveland for sure.
Yeah,
before Lindor gets back, and before they sort of stabilize.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe even that then isn't going to be a good reflection. But the Astros, I think, how they play the Astros at the end of a very long road trip, they'll have gone like 2 weeks basically without an off day.
Yeah,
that's going to tell me a lot about the team going forward.
Here's what I'll say. I do not. Part of what's made this year so delightful is its unexpectedness and how the expectations have not been there, and so everything has been gravy, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I am not going to adjust that sort of mentality. It'll be, you know, disappointing if they lose 9 of their next 11 games. I'll absolutely be sad about that. But, like, it's, you know, this has been a really great start for both the short term of just getting to watch good baseball and also the longer term of seeing guys hopefully making adjustments. So I think what you mentioned earlier, Kate, about how you were coming into this year wanting to watch each individual player for something, or wanting to watch, like, Domingo Santana see how he looks. I think continuing to watch with that mentality is what I'm going to try and do, and what, you know, I watch them however you please, but I think that that's a great way to watch and find entertainment and satisfaction in the team regardless, in so much as that's possible for you.
The Mariners are a really good exercise in mindfulness right now, right?
Yes.
They're all teaching us how to live better.
Yeah, that's the whole point of sports, right? Is to get, you know, life lessons out of it and try to mine.
That's what movies have told me.
Yeah, oh yeah. It's all about mining actual meaning from, you know, Tim Beckham doubles and Dan Vogelbach home runs. How did that apply to me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's been, I mean, for me, the funness of this season has been watching the guys who have never succeeded in a Mariners uniform do that. So that's, you know, Vogie, because he never got playing time. D. Gordon looks like himself. And then the new guys who just didn't play for the Mariners before. But, like, Santana and Beckham and Malik have just been all the fun in the world. So that's what I've liked about it so far.
It's really joyful. Like, I feel so joyful for Tim Beckham. Like, I want him. He's had a rough road, you know, and all those pressure, all those expectations. And he just seems to be having so much fun, and I'm so happy for him.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's easy to root for these guys, I think, which makes it, you know, even if things do go south, that'll make it a little easier for me. Just not, like, actually hating any of the players is a plus, as it turns out. Let's talk about this sort of weird embarrassment of riches we've fallen into, where Kyle Seager is going to come back in June, and he's going to have a spot on the roster, which will force someone out, and we have some questions about it. Zay on Twitter at Zay51 and Steven Mattia basically had the same question, which is, like, when Seager comes back, who's the odd man out? Does Kyle maybe go to a utility role if Ryan Healy is still, you know, playing well and not fucking up at third base every day? Like, what do you guys envision when Kyle's back? And, like, especially if they're still, let's say, just above 500, and that kind of makes the decision a little more meaningful.
When is Seager slated to get back?
probably like early June.
Early June.
Maybe late May, but probably early June.
Early June. And I hope he has like a, I hope they are very
You can give
deliberate.
Him up to 20 days, maybe 30 days. I think it's 20 days of rehab as a max.
I hope that they just send him all over the system. I want to see Kyle Seager in West Virginia. I want to see him in Tacoma. I want to see him in
Arkansas.
From
North Carolina.
He'd probably love it. No, send Kyle Seager to the power for a while. I think that would be great.
Let him talk to Jared and Julio.
And Bobby Honeyman, have him coach up. Kyle Seager coaching
whispering.
Up. Oh, absolutely. Kyle Seager coaching up Bobby Honeyman at third would be awesome, I think. So I hope that they take their time with him, because it's useless to rush him back, especially when the team is doing well, or maybe there's no reason to do it. I am so concerned about his bat.
Yeah, I can really hear it in your voice.
I'm really going to not enjoy not watching Ryan Healy at third base and the like miniature heart attacks I get every time a ball is hit to the left side of the infield.
Yeah, that is not fun.
Yeah, I mean, literally.
Anywhere on the left side, whether it's Healy Moore at third or Beckham at short, I'm like, this could be anything. This could turn into three bases.
The Mariners are the argument for like why having fewer strikeouts makes baseball more exciting, because there is a reasonable case to be made that like at players are just better than they ever have been, and like you have more athleticism, more balls in play are going to be turned into outs, but like not here. Like, think anything could happen. If a ground ball is hit anywhere other than D. Gordon, you just better hold on tight.
Yeah.
Like,
Ryan is a decent defensive first baseman, but I guess we get some Jay Bruce in the outfield. Somebody on Twitter suggested cycling them now so that they're getting used to it.
Yeah, I might as well.
The schedule is so punishing for right now, too, that it would be good to get guys used to having scheduled off days.
Right.
And I think, you're just going to have to start machining them all through, right? Mm. Like, sometimes Ryan will play third, and sometimes Kyle will play third. And so... I think Dylan Moore, maybe they try to send him to Tacoma.
I mean, he's certainly the odd man out here to answer the question. He's got three options left, so he'll be on the Tacoma shuttle, I assume, once Kyle's back.
Yeah,
I think
maybe even before that.
I think the likeliest, because I don't know if they would send Moore down, just because you do need to have a utility person, and Kyle, there are no other shortstops other than D.
That's true.
And D's was moved off of shortstop for a reason. So
D would be passable at shortstop, and you can put Kyle at second. Kyle played second in
sure,
college.
Right, but I guess it would be rough.
I do not think you can keep Dylan Moore and his noodle bat on the roster when Kyle Seager comes back.
What I think is more likely is that by that time we've seen a trade.
Hopefully.
Because, especially if Encarnacion and Jay Bruce are hitting, in this scenario where the M's are still over 500 and like looking like they're in it, I don't think that necessarily changes the way that the M's look for or target a trade, but I think there's a great chance that they look for either a starting, like a high minor starting pitching prospect, or someone, another in middle infield prospect,
right, like a
something like that,
like a need based trade, where you're filling a very specific hole,
which is because They've said it. They said it. Jerry said it again in the most recent wheelhouse. Like, they're not going to, regardless of what they make trades for, any trade that they make that would essentially go onto the major league roster would be dependent on having years of control. And I think that makes sense. But that means that you're looking for players that either you think you can get more out of than the other team has, or
which we've seen them do,
but I think the likeliest resolution is either an injury to one of the four guys who are playing first or third, or a trade of Bruce or Encarnacion.
Oh, hold the presses. We got a minor league dinger.
Ooh, who dingered?
Number 21 on the Rainiers. He's left-handed and he hit a home run. Shedlong scores. I truly have no idea who that is. It is a Whiteman, it looks like.
And Joey Carletta scored.
Oh my god.
So we have a
three-run
dinger in Sacramento.
Look at Joey Carletta standing next to
Shedlong. Is that Lobatone?
Might be Tim Lopes.
I don't think Tim Lopes is left-handed.
Right, no, I think you're right.
This is a great podcast material.
Yeah, sorry.
We have it 1:05 p.m. on Monday, and the Rainiers hit a home run, and none of us who are paid to cover the Mariners know who he was. Good job, Bob.
It is Lobatone.
Lobatone.
I take back all the
DH, Jose Lobatone.
Oh, and J.P. Crawford follows a ringing single. Okay, well, let's reel this back in.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I don't think we'll make a trade for any kind of middle infield, because you have Shed and J.P. Crawford hanging out in Tacoma pushing for spots, and now Tim Beckham is, you know... Any trade that I think would be made would be for pitching, because our pitching is just so... Yeah. So thin.
Okay, so let's move to this this question from Roop DeVille. Thank you, Roop DeVille.
That's good.
Will Jay Bruce still be a Mariner by Independence Day? If we're talking trades, and especially for pitching, like, Jay Bruce could be that guy. The question really becomes, like, who would need Jay Bruce? And who would want Jay Bruce? Not that he's bad. He's, you know, older and... not really like a marquee trade chip. It'd be weird, I think.
He's a great candidate for Cleveland, who just has him.
Yeah.
No outfielders that are good other than Leonis Martin, who is coming off of a life-threatening illness.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And whose bat is still extremely Leonis Martin.
Yeah.
It's a pretty decent defensive outfield, but they cannot hit at all.
No.
And they are starting Jake Bowers at first base, who is a reasonable prospect, but is... been a little shaky, and then Carlos Santana.
It has some positional flexibility.
He can play outfield.
Right. And so that would sort of fit with what they were going for in terms of having, you know, a couple guys.
And Cleveland has pitching that they could give us. They have some pitching.
They certainly
prospects.
Do. I don't have a great sense of where they're at the high minors, but do you know anyone off the top of your head?
Not off the top of my head.
Sure. I do think that would be the first fit. The nice thing with Bruce is that because he's just a little bit more athletic, you can send him to an NL team. So that, if the Rockies are in it, Rockies would be a good fit. They had Ian Desmond is a disaster.
Big facts.
David Dahl just got hurt. Daniel Murphy broke his hand.
Yeah. Really? I didn't even see that.
Or broke his finger.
I love Jay Bruce too much to send him to the Rockies.
But
they
he
are
hit so many dingers.
He would hit all the dingers.
I think that's a pretty neat place to go.
I also don't want anything out of the Rockies system, really, that is pitching, because I don't know. But no, there are definite fits for him around the league. I would be sad to see Dad Bruce, because I love a good team.
Yeah, it's pretty.
I saw him do one interview at FanFest, and a fan asked him to sing, and he sang, and it was just very sweet. He sang, "I've got friends in low places."
Oh, that's a great.
Yeah,
cult,
well,
too.
Apparently he sang it at the Grand Ole Opry, and he was like, "People wait their whole lives to get on that stage, and I just desecrated it."
Wow.
It was like a charity thing.
We love a self-deprecating dad.
He's a self-deprecating dad, and he just seems to be a great teammate, and everything I've heard is that the guys just love him. So
yeah, with that said, I don't think he'll be a Mariner by Independence Day.
All right.
I mean, one of Bruce or Encarnacion has to go. Otherwise, I'm going to wonder if Jerry has any sort of plan. You can't just keep him around all year. That would be a complete waste. You got to get something. So I'm going to say Bruce is the one to go. A lot of it because of that positional versatility. Encarnacion is pretty much limited to AL teams unless an NL team really has a first base disaster they need filled. So I'm going to say Bruce is gone by Independence Day, much to Kate's dismay. I think he'll be all right. There's other dads out there. A lot of the guys on the team have children.
It's not just being a dad, though.
You have to embody the
anyone
actual...
Anyone can be a father, but it takes someone special to be a dad.
Wow.
Yeah, my dad actually had a mug that said that.
No way!
Give it to him.
It is plagiarizing.
I'm plagiarizing.
Please do not cancel us. Okay. Speaking of, while we're kind of on that first base logjam, we got another question about one of those men involved in the logjam.
Let me guess. Is it our large adult son?
Oh, no, but we could do that.
No.
This one was regarding one Edwin Encarnacion.
Yeah.
Not directly, though. This is from Trista Winnie on Twitter. Trista wants to know, which invisible animal would you give a ride around the bases after hitting a home run, i.e. Edwin's parrot that he, you know, carries around after hitting a home run? You didn't plan for this, I'm noticing.
I didn't. I saw this question. It's a great question. I mean, I kind of want to say falcon, so that I could have, like, the falconer's
mitt falconry?
Up. Yeah.
Gonna be honest, that seems too that's close. A really... Well, I guess that...
Oh, shoot! Running around doing that's not a good
thing. Running around with an arm extended in the air.
I'm sorry, I just did it here. Got a visual. That's cancel so that answer. Cancel. That answer is canceled.
This is good workshopping.
I'm going to think. John, why don't you go ahead?
So, I think Edwin's done a really good job, and I think it's hard to sort of delineate, like, what animal you've
gotten. Yeah, that's the problem.
I think the next step is, what invisible animal are you riding around the bases?
Ooh.
So
that's also very limited, though. You can only ride
It's true,
the
but
animals.
No one's doing it, so you get to sort that of be true. On the ground
right,
floor
right.
setting the tone. Like, yeah. if Edwin was just doing what he did but said, like, oh, this is my hawk, like, it'd be, all, you know, it'd be like, oh, you know... Walk the hawk, but...
No, maybe. Not Mike Hawk. No.
Well,
no.
You said
no.
that. We did.
No.
let's avoid that.
I think I would like maybe like a koala bear, although it would be hard
you
to
would
show.
Just hug it?
Yeah.
It would be like hugging.
An animal just clinging to me.
There's a lot of production into that.
Chewing on my hair, maybe. I don't know. I just love the idea of, like, a koala bear, like, congratulating me for hitting a home run, and I just get to cuddle it as I'm running.
I think they're sort of assholes, aren't they?
I've heard mixed things. I think they're very chill, very docile when they're unbothered.
Yeah.
But then, like, I think if a human was to, like, go up to a koala and bother it,
well, they sleep,
be an
like,
asshole.
18 hours a day, too,
so
right?
maybe if you just had a sleeping koala.
Oh, that would be very on brand for me.
This, there could not be a worse thing to put audio-wise on the podcast, but have either of y'all heard a koala, like, scream?
Yes. Oh my god, I've seen that.
It
video.
Is an unworldly sound. And
so you would be doing that and making the koala scream.
Yeah, I'm screaming and hugging.
It could not be a better incentive. Yeah. Your on-base percentage would be fantastic because pitchers would never want you to get anything to hit a home run.
Yeah, I'm terrified of what that would look like, but I will try it.
I love otters, so I feel like I would try to like act like I was part of a family of playful sea otters. Like,
do you think
maybe I would take a teammate and hold their hand as I went around the bay, like otters. Hold hands when
oh,
they
I
fall
see.
Asleep.
That's definitely not allowed.
I think it's
Are you like saying you're gonna call a teammate out from the dugout?
Yeah, and just hold here. Hands and
then
float
they just
around
run on the,
field.
Yeah.
Just float
get
around
ejected,
the bases.
But,
it's like that video. Remember when that softball player like broke their leg on the home
run
truck?
That
but
was
none
beautiful.
Of their players could help. And then,
it'd be like that. But Kate is just calling out friends to help her. No one's injured. It's just a party.
No, I would like. Oh man, I'd get the fans involved. I'd find like a kid in the stands, and I'm surprised that's not a thing. Honestly,
you otter do that. Aww. Nailed it. Man, we're killing it today. This in-person podcast really opens things up nicely for our jokes, for our animal noises. Things like that. Okay, so we are chugging right along here. We have a varied range of questions. I'm trying to somehow pull them all together while also keeping an eye on this riveting Rainiers River Cats game that's happening right now. I guess this is something that we should probably touch on real quick just because it's sort of timely. Early in the season, we always see these weird schedules, both from the actual schedule makers themselves and from the weird rainouts, bad weather situations. Last year, we had the famous games in Minnesota that were like 15 degrees.
Oh my god, those are so miserable.
You had Guillermo Heredia wearing his entire wardrobe on the field. Things like that. But he was literally wearing like nine layers.
He was flared up like that kid in the Christmas story.
Yeah.
Okay, normal. That was Guillermo.
So our own Eric Sanford, delightful presence on Twitter and in real life, came at us with some heat. He said, please stop being cowards, rude, And give us your best answer to last week's Fan Post Friday prompt, which was, how would you fix MLB scheduling? This came on the heels of the cancellation at Guaranteed Rate Field, whatever it's called.
Quick plug for the fan posts. Every Friday, Eric posts a question. You can write a fan post on the site to respond to it if you happen to like the question.
Yeah.
If you do a good job, we will put it on the front page of the site. So if you want to get your voice out there, go and do that.
Dangling the carrot of exposure. It's so delicious. So I actually did some research on this.
Not filling.
I figured out a way to fix this problem so we will never have 10-degree games again. It's going to piss off a lot of teams, but I think it's only fair that we don't play any games in the Midwest until June. Thoughts?
I think that's great. I think that's... I mean, it's been like an annual issue, just especially now that the season's moved up earlier. Because
right.
I think that's not a bad thing, you know, that the players get a few extra off days during the season. But, like, it's just so... It's unbelievably, like, unprepared that, like, Seattle has a roof in a place that, like, while it has obviously a reputation for raining a lot,
yeah.
has less annual rainfall than, like, Minnesota and, I think, Chicago. Like, a number of the places where these Midwestern games are happening.
Sure.
So,
and the, like, the March-April rain here is a little more calm.
Yeah.
Like, you're getting full-on storms in some of these places.
Yeah. Like, if they want to host baseball games, they need to, you know, sort of be mature and actually prepare to host a baseball game.
You need to be mature and say, fuck the entire Midwest.
Yeah.
You don't get anything. We're going to front-load your schedule with road games. I actually put this together. There's a way to do this where... The first couple, let's say the first three series of every year all start in the same 15 cities. So it's the Mariners, who have the roof, obviously.
Yeah.
A's, Angels, Rangers, who have good weather.
Yeah.
Astros, who have a roof. Toronto has a roof. Tampa has a roof. Miami has good weather and a roof. San Diego, LA, Arizona, no problems there.
Yeah.
And Milwaukee has a roof. So then the risks would be that's only... 12. The risks would come if you had, like, Atlanta, I feel like, could be
that's
okay.
That's probably pretty solid, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, the Eastern Seaboard ones, like D.C., could probably do it. You are, you know, risking the random storm here and there. And then maybe Kansas City, you get cold for sure. I don't think they have the crazy...
It's not quite as rainy.
Rainy and windy situations.
There was an awful game in D.C. where it was raining, just pouring. You remember? It was like... One of the Armed Services Day or something.
Oof.
Rob Whalen pitched. Segura got hurt sliding or something.
That was awful.
You
really
want
to avoid like
so.
DC, Philly, Chicago, or not DC. I mean, I guess sometimes DC, Philly, and Chicago and Minnesota. I feel like are the
ones. If we're doing DC, you can probably do Baltimore also.
Baltimore, yeah.
That's gonna be dicey, but I think you're gonna get a much better experience. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah.
The other way of doing it also is just expand. Expand to add two more teams, and you can have Vegas or Portland and Montreal, you know, like...
And make them build stadiums
have
with
to have a roof.
Yeah. Well, like, all three of those almost assuredly would have a roof on their stadium. I mean, like, Portland has sort of similar rain rep to Seattle, maybe doesn't get quite as much, but... And then Vegas, it'd be like Arizona, where it's so hot that you have to have the AC, and Montreal, just like, you know, they... do in Toronto, you'd want to have a roof. So, I think we fixed it.
I do feel like the teams that have, you know, gone the extra mile to put a roof on their stadium should be rewarded with, like, opening day at home every year. Like, don't make us start on the road in these cold climates if we have the ability to just avoid that altogether.
I think you should be punished if you can't host a baseball game.
Yes.
I agree. Yeah, you're a bad baseball team if you can't actually host the baseball games that drive the revenue to your team. It's pretty simple.
And it's unfair that it screws up the other team. That Minnesota thing really... The Mariners had to make an extra stop in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And that was when they were starting to, like, kind of crater. So
I hate to see that. Yeah, okay, we can't do this entire podcast without talking about our large adult son, who you hinted at earlier.
Of course.
We need to give him some shine. He's been... One of the best hitters in Major League history through 11 games. I think that's fair to say. He's having one of the best starts to the season of anyone in the history of this sport. We're, of course, talking about Daniel Vogelbach and his just prodigious home run rate thus far. We take a break. Safe. Oh, okay, yeah. Cool.
Sorry, we're also watching the Rainiers just boat race the River Cats.
Yeah,
right,
well,
now
I turned around to do this podcast, which is the reason I'm here, and the Rainiers are up 7-3.
They do have eight straight hits, including a Braden Bishop double.
You know who else has eight straight hits? Daniel Vogelbaum. Don't fact check me. The thing that I have...
There will be no fact checking.
I think
this
I can
podcast.
Say this truthfully is... When he hits the ball in the air, it goes over the fence.
Yes.
That has been pretty true to this point.
Or at least, like, right up to the fence.
Yeah.
We missed a Vogel salami by, like, mere inches yesterday. Yeah.
And some of these home runs have been absurd. The one against the Angels was, like, seemed physically impossible when you look at all of the things
that happened.
Yeah.
It hovered. Yeah.
And it, like, really wasn't a good swing. He's just dummy thick, and he was able to hit it out. Based
on
your thickness.
We need to ask ourselves, is Daniel Vogelbach perhaps a wizard?
Mm.
And he was just like, just like did some kind of magic spell to keep that ball just floating. Give it just
and to get him into the lineup every day. There's probably some wizardry there.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if he's ever like seen a lineup and then done some like invisible ink situation or something. You know, worked his magic at the expense of, you know, a Jay Bruce or a Dylan Moore to get himself in there.
He actually had a very nice quote yesterday after the game, because I think it's something that's been of note is that like his playing schedule has been so inconsistent, and according to Ryan Divish and Shannon Dreher and people, like he has not complained or shown frustration.
Mm-hmm.
But his quote was that it's easy to stay in the game and stay focused with this group because it's always fun. There's always something going on. Every inning is exciting. We're always scoring runs. So it's easy to stay focused and stay in the game and not let your mind zone off, which like is pretty simple, but also like, yeah, it is pretty easy to be like, you know, it's, I think one of the things that maybe we talked about, but I know folks were mentioning, was concern that some of the veterans especially would be a little bit frustrated in Seattle early in the season because, like, Edwin Encarnacion was not trying to be here. you know, like, signed a contract with Cleveland probably because he wanted to be, like, a good hitter on a... you know, playoff contender.
Yeah. It would be hilarious if we ended up being better than Cleveland.
Oh, it would be amazing.
Which is in play, I think.
It's very in play. The Mariners could not make the playoffs and still be better than Cleveland. And, like, that's not out of the question. Like,
Central trash.
Yeah. But, like, as so long as the team is good and so long as everyone's sort of on the same page, and, you know, they're making that happen, obviously. But I think that's it's a bit of a self-sustaining thing there. I do think there's something interesting about, maybe not interesting, but Vogelbach has only played three innings at first base this year for as much as he's played. And I think that part of that is they're trying to showcase Encarnacion and Bruce and show like, hey, these guys are healthy. They can handle, you know, first base and DH. Trade for them. But like...
They're like Vogelbach, the featured pets on the adoption website.
Like, they need a good home.
Sunday
exactly.
Showcase.
Yeah.
Here's Jay. He loves scritches behind the ears. Excellent OBP.
A versatile pet. Handle a lot of different spots around your home.
I think it'll be interesting to see, especially if we do get some trades, whether they start giving Vogelbach more work at first, because it's long been said, essentially, like, he is almost purely a hitter. Like, he is the most positionless player in baseball.
Yeah.
Like, there aren't that many of them, but, like Kendrys Morales is essentially that way. And Willie Calhoun, who's sort of one of the top prospects for the Rangers who came up with the Dodgers, is that way as well. But Willie Calhoun at least is like kind of fast. He just has a terrible arm and like no instincts. So like they keep putting him in. He's like 5'6".
He's teeny.
Like, but yeah, like they just keep sticking him in left field. He is a very funny player.
He's
amazing at hitting.
Yeah.
But like there aren't that many of those guys. And it's very... I want him to continue getting work because I think he can be a solid enough hitter to make it happen. But it's going to, you know, we saw how the Mariners were, for as great as Nelson Cruz was, a little bit limited by having a full-time DH on their roster. And I wonder if they are willing to do that.
Limited, but the trade-off was Nelson Cruz is still, I think, the best DH in baseball.
Like, absolutely.
You're getting so much value out of... So it's a guy, you trade off a little bit of that to have someone who is going to just drive in runs.
Yes.
Just their job.
I think it was worth it. I think that the things that you don't get as a result, though, are... You have a three-person bench, and you can't really use one of the players that you have there. You have to start almost all of your infielders every game. You know, you don't get to get guys days off that often.
Right.
And that's kind of what they have right now with the four first basemen. So it'll be interesting to see how that works. But I mean, he hit a homer off a lefty yesterday, which was a big concern for him. It's like, if you're going to be a DH only, you have to hit, you have to
right.
be
yeah, platoon brew. Platoon DH.
Right.
No.
So it's been awesome to watch him, and I hope he continues getting plate appearances. I think there's an outside chance that our Ben Thoen's prediction comes true, that he is a top 20 WRC plus player, except that he doesn't have enough plate appearances to qualify.
Yeah.
But,
he's not the kind of guy who's just kind of like, hit singles. Like, he's gonna, when he hits the ball, it's like in the gap, or it's to the warning track, or it's 430 feet. So
I would like to make a suggestion to all listeners who attend a game in person. If Vogelbach is not playing, find you a place where you can look at the Mariners dugout and look at what Vogelbach is doing the whole game, because he is made himself a way to stay involved at all times. And he's constantly on the top rail. He's constantly like the first guy for high fives and hugs and handshakes. He's learning Japanese. Is that the cutest thing? Oh my God. It's just, his teammates love him. And if you watch him interact with them, you can really see why.
Speaking of the bench, this is just something that's been on my mind. It is truly improbable that the Mariners replace their backup catcher from the University of Hawaii with another backup catcher from the University of Hawaii.
No, really?
Tom Murphy also went to Hawaii. It's a fact. They found two white guys who are both catchers from Hawaii. Well, not from Hawaii, who played in Hawaii.
Yeah. One of whom, by the way, I said this before, but I insist is Aaron Rodgers in like a
he
pretty
really,
shaky
yeah,
disguise.
Tom Murphy looks a lot like Aaron
Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, wanted out of Green Bay, knows no bounds.
Yeah.
Our Bleacher Report exclusive.
Okay. We've had a pretty sunny recording session, a lot of positive vibes. We should probably, since this is a Mariners podcast, just slight pivot to not the dark space, but just a cloudier space. Mainly, I want to see John's reaction to this. Right, we got a question from CRT Sports Cards on Twitter. They would like to know if we have any concerns with Mitch Haniger's early strikeout totals when compared to last season, or is this something that we should just expect to see from him going forward? Like 160 strikeouts a year is just what Mitch Haniger is going to do.
I'm going to kick this one over to John because John is our Haniger expert. And also, in Friday's recap, I expressed some concern. Like, it feels to me like Mitch Haniger is getting off to a slow start just because I have seen him have it. Mm-hmm. It's how spoiled we are, right? Like, I am so used to Mitch Haniger every time putting up a good at bat.
Yeah.
It's shocked me a little bit how he has kind of struck out on some ugly looking pitches.
Well, and I remember last year he started so hot when he was hitting sixth, remember? Because we had Cano and Cruz and Seager still ahead of him. So they were batting him sixth, but he was clearly like overqualified for that. And then eventually he moved up. But,
hit 10 dingers in April, I believe.
Something like
March
that.
Plus April. Haniger struck out 148 times last year. I think it's reasonable to suspect he would be in that range again. He's a little bit over that pace right now. I think that'll slow down. He's not going to walk at a 3.6% rate.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's also had some, like, fantastic at-bats. Like, in that Angels game, I want to say.
Yes.
He had that long, long at-bat that ended up with fouling off a number of pitches and then getting the RBI double to tie it so that Vogelbach could win it. So I think he's still that good hitter. He is going to strike out at a rate that, if you've been watching baseball for a long time, is probably going to look like a pretty high strikeout rate. it's also around a league average rate. Like, mm-hmm. the league average strikeout rate is 23%. He struck out below that last year at 21.7. Right now he's striking out 25%. But
which we think is going to stabilize. That's going to go. Mitch Haniger is not going to be striking out 25% of the time.
Yeah, like not. if you think that some of the Mariners are going to stabilize in a bad way, I think Mitch is a guy who is going to stabilize in a little bit of a good way. And he's currently, even with very few walks and a little bit more strikeout, or a little bit more or higher of a strikeout rate than usual, he's still got a 135 WRC plus. He's still just got a very solid, 817 OPS. I mean, he's been perfectly solid. He's been the guy who we thought would be the best hitter in the lineup, and he's been that, except yeah. that everyone else in the lineup has yeah. been insanely good. So
I mean,
it's like,
we were predicting that he was going to walk a bunch more at the beginning of the season just because we were like, oh, he's never going to see a pitch to right. hit. But yeah. currently, that's not. That's going to change probably because we know what Haniger is and his level of consistency. We've seen Tim Beckham. We've seen Ryan Healy maybe not put up the same kinds of numbers that they're putting up now.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible that as others regress, Mitch will kind of regress in a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is April 8th.
Yeah.
Something to consider. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm trying not to do the whole, like, oh my God, like, this is what the team is thing, because it's just not the case. You know?
As football fans are quick to remind you, and I heard on the radio on the way over here, we've played the equivalent of 1 week of the NFL.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
That's true.
So you wouldn't make huge sweeping determinations about teams in the NFL after 1 week. So
yeah, with that said, I've already started doing some mock-ups for Dan Vogelbach's Hall of Fame plaque and picking out closer music for Brandon Brennan, which actually might not be that crazy.
Yeah, actually,
that might actually happen.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that Brandon Brennan would be the one to rise above sort of the dumpiness of the bullpen.
The Mariners did. I mean,
we haven't talked about the bullpen yet. Do we want to? Will we all be able to?
Did we get any questions about it?
I don't think so. I think people are...
people don't want to think about it.
They don't want to devote any headspace to it.
Yeah. Tui Vailala is going to come back in a month or so, right?
And Armstrong should. Yeah. Well, Tui Vailala might be like a month or two.
Okay.
But we should get Armstrong back soon. And Swarzak being back. Like,
Swarzak has looked very relatively solid.
Yeah. I think he is like a definitely above average reliever, which is like the only one
that is the bar to clear.
He's the only guy that has been an above average reliever before. I mean, I guess Guerin was at one point, but has not looked like it and needs to. I mean, if you look at video of him in Japan and look at a video of him in the last couple outings, he doesn't look the same.
Yeah.
And whether that's injury or whether he just got jacked up somehow. So hopefully they can get him right again. But the offense needs to hit as much as they do for the bullpen to not be blowing stuff.
Right.
And that will not completely sustain. But I think we're going to have a lot of 7-6, 9-7 games this year, just like we have already.
We've been saying that since November. Like, it was very clear that this was going to be the scoring and the final box scores of the entire 2019 Mariners.
Well, like, that's how it was, like, very obviously looked like it was going to be, but we've had a lot of, like, this is how it's going to look, and then it just doesn't happen. I don't remember a year where it has been, like, the archetypes have come true.
Right.
So, like, everyone is the most of themselves in this team right now. And it's very entertaining. Like, the bullpen is an absolute liability. The defense, the infield defense, especially without Kyle Seager, is a complete coin flip. And, like, the offense, every single person in the lineup is an above-average hitter, except for D, who still is a good player.
Yeah.
Like,
and we still love him.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it seems like they heard us, because we had always been saying, like, if you're going to suck, suck out loud. And obviously they haven't sucked. They've done the opposite, where it's like, if you're going to be good, score 11 runs every time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Only hit extra base hits. So, thank you, as always, for your questions. We got this one in at about an hour, so Look at us. Fantastic. Turns out when we're actually seeing each other and having a normal conversation, it's easy to know when your turn is up. Yeah. You'll have to guess.
When people start staring off into the distance, you have talked too long.
Yeah, once Kate is watching this River Cats reliever for multiple pitches at once, that's when I know that we should move to a new topic. But yeah, thank you as always. Keep with us as we play the Royals and Astros. It's going to be a nice sort of litmus test for can the Mariners beat a shitty team that they're supposed to beat, and can they maybe hang with a juggernaut like the Astros, who they played well last year, although with a much different roster.
And Edwin Diaz.
And Edwin Diaz, who, yes, was part of the roster.
I'm just saying. So, yeah. Edwin Diaz single-handedly won a bunch of those games.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. All right, well, go Mariners. Go Vogelbach. Bullpen.
Go maybe. Fighting Vogelbachs.
Yeah, bullpen. Maybe do like a wellness retreat and check back in. Check back in once you've centered yourself.
Bye. Martin had a dream. Martin had a dream. Kendrick have a dream.